Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Bobby Moore and Sir Jeff Hurst, the Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, a Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United. We celebrate our victories, we stick together in defeat. I'm proud of our history, West Ham United, more than just a podcast. More than just a podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome. This is more than just a podcast.
Podcast? Sounded like Frost then.
That was the aim. That's the aim. yes, it is Series 13, Episode 48. Is that right, John?
47.
47, I beg your pardon. I've come early again. yeah, well, don't ask the wife. So anyway, joining us this week to discuss our past footballing week and what is to come in a hopefully a great week of football. You've heard Mr. John Bucci.
Hello.
You doing, John? Where are you? What's the phrase?
Where are you? What are you doing?
Yeah, where are you?
I'm at home doing a podcast with yous.
Yeah. Also joining today is Lord Canningtown, Lynn.
Hello.
How you doing, Lynn? Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm tired, but I'm doing a podcast with you.
Ah, thank you very much. Bless you, Lynn. You still under the weather?
I am. Every time I talk to someone, yeah, someone asks me, I say I've still got this virus, and someone says, my missus got that. Had it for about 2 or 3 months now.
Oh, right.
Mm. Which is strange, because this seems more contagious than the COVID epidemic.
Mm.
I didn't know anyone who had COVID, I don't think. And now I know everyone has had this.
Well, it's not a COVID podcast, but I do have a theory about that. Is that actually, I'm not an anti-vaxxer or whatever they call them. But there's a bit of me that thinks it was rushed out a bit quick. And as catching COVID weakened our immune system.
I didn't have it. First time though.
No, but you had it at some point.
Probably, yeah.
So as that then, as it, you know, because people don't know what these things do they?
No.
So it's quite possible that without us knowing, either the vaccine or actually having COVID, has weakened the immune system, because I never used to really get ill at all.
No.
But since I had COVID, I still struggle with my sense of smell. Which, when you drop a few, can be quite handy.
Yeah.
Believe me. And, there's a couple of... And taste is not fantastic either. A lot of things taste bland.
No, you do have bad taste, I must admit.
Yeah. Not in women. I would add. Possibly. I do have bad taste. But, yeah. Just throw that out there. Anyway... Enough of that old bollocks.
It's not a medical podcast.
Have you been out for a few beers yet, J-Lo?
No. Do you know what? I'm thinking about it.
Go and have a smash up and see what happens.
Yeah, that does make me feel a bit better, temporarily.
Tuesday night's coming. Always a Tuesday night, Gordon.
Yeah. Well, I have my beer in the middle of the day. So it gives me time to rehydrate, you know what I mean? So I'm healthy like that. Plus, I have a lunch with it. It's just the way I am, really. Working advertising all my life.
Yeah. Well, enough of the Matt Letizia bollocks. Let's move on to football.
Football.
We've had just the one game this week for us to discuss. And boy, what a game of football it was. I remember the good old days when football used to be 90 minutes. But just imagine the fun we'd miss out on if it did stop at 90 minutes. This week we played Wolverhampton Wanderers. I'll start with the usual crap. Any of us go?
No.
Did we all watch it?
Yes.
I watched one half, listened to the radio the first half, and the commentators were just laughing about it, really.
Okay, that's good. That's good to start, because the funny thing is, I always find is that we end up discussing these games, and generally we're talking to people that have seen the game. So they would have seen. So I actually think, shall we bother with the first half and just jump to the second half? Because, frankly, I don't know about yous, that's possibly the worst half of football I've seen in at least a decade.
Oof. And that's it was described as West Ham and mannequins, was what they said on the radio.
I would say it's
when you think mannequins.
Well, I don't know. I mean, whenever you think in that decade, Sam Allardyce has managed West Ham, that's where I'm placing that half. Worse than I can think of as a West Ham performance, because there was no West Ham out there in that first half, was there?
No, they weren't. They didn't look engaged at all, did they? I suppose if we don't talk about it, do we pass the penalty?
That's a good point. So let's discuss. So that was probably the big talking point of the half. Then let's start with you, then, John.
I would have wanted that as a penalty if it was against us.
You would have wanted it.
Yeah, I mean, he went down, he slid into the tackle. I think he got the ball eventually, but I think I would have wanted that as a penalty. And I'm always disagreed, but that's my opinion.
What about you, Nigel? He says, quickly looking at YouTube to look at the penalty again that he's forgot about.
Look it up. So this is how I see it. Is I think it's a home team penalty. I think if you're the away team and that tackle goes in, they look at it, and he sort of did catch the ball. And the funny thing is, people think that if you touch the ball, that means whatever happens after is not a foul. That ain't the case. But I didn't see enough in the follow through to think that it was worthy of a penalty. I can see why it was given, though.
I think he kind of got the ball having got through his foot first.
Man first, then ball.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, he went to ground as well, and I think it was all kind of against him. And you know, I think once the referee made the decision, then when the VAR look at it, they're not going to go against that decision, because it is one that could go, like you say, it was a. I agree with your statement. It's the home team penalty, but. You know, you would have still, as a West Ham fan, if they'd been the other way around, you still would have wanted it, I think.
Yeah, it looks like a penalty to me. Let's have a look.
Yeah, so now you'll see it. So it was Al Nouri, is it? The Algerian? Obviously a better one than Benrahma, by the looks of him. Perhaps we can see why Benrahma's not been in the Algerian team as well. Maybe a bit harsh, but, he was... He was running through us at times, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, the initial setup with the dropping of Antonio, I found that a bit strange.
Yeah, maybe he was trying to keep him fresh, but he never tries anything else, does he? I mean, don't start me on him.
Maybe he was. He's 34 years old, he's injury prone. Maybe he was trying to save him for Thursday. happened.
Well, was it the first half that Bowen went off injured?
Start of the second.
Second, wasn't it, yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the first half, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that put Wolves up 1-0. We start the second half and he makes substitutions, brings on Antonio, brings on Ben Johnson.
I thought he had a good impact, Ben Johnson.
Took off, I believe, Souček and Koufal, if I'm right. How do you see that then? You obviously watched the second half.
Mm. I mean, I couldn't say if it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do because I didn't see the first half. So, but at least he changed things quick. He realised it wasn't working. But I tend to think that he just wanted to fuck off a half. Oh.
Sorry about that, my fault.
That's all right. I just think he wanted to like get rid of the first half of football. And it didn't work because, judging what I've just seen there, there are plenty of chances, good chances in the first half. And, yeah, so it had to be done, and thankfully he did it. But you'd have to tell me if it was the right thing to do. Well, were they not getting the game?
We don't normally do it. So, first half stat attack. Wolves had 4 shots off target, but 6 on target, right, and 1 blocked. So right, that was 11 shots in the first half for Wolves. West Ham had 2 blocked shots. That's your lot. Possession-wise, Wolves had 64, so we had 36. We had 3 crosses into the box. That's it. That's the first half.
Right.
Now, the difference. Jump to the second half stats.
Well, our first shot was the penalty, wasn't it? On target.
So, I'm trying to think now. Was it our first shot, the penalty?
I think our first shot on target was our actual penalty because the disallowed goal, does that count? Does it? I don't know.
I don't think it does. I mean, all right, let's start with the contentious issue. So it starts stacking up. So Emerson, who's given away the penalty in the first half, West Ham win the ball back on the edge of the area. Ball comes over. Emerson runs into the box, head zone. VAR, the referee's whistle blows after he scores. Goal disallowed. What are your views on that?
Harsh. To my view. I think he was running in, eye on the ball, caught his foot, but I don't think it was enough for him to go down rolling about like he did. So, I was disappointed with that decision. But again, I think the ref gave it and the VAR didn't particularly want to overturn the ref's decision. So, I think that's how that's operating, or was operating in that game. But lots of VAR to talk about coming up.
Yeah. So, VAR decide. I mean, there's contact there, but was it enough for the player to go down?
I don't think so. Do you?
Lynn, did you see it?
I did. I mean, they get given now, don't they, when you look at the VAR. I must admit, when I first saw it, I thought we fouled him on first glance.
Thought he pushed him in the back or something.
Well, it just looked like it was coming together and he went down. And I don't know if it was his position that made me think he's fouled him. Because he didn't... I thought that he could have... He wasn't upright when Emerson got a chance to head the ball in. And it didn't quite look right. There's no reason why he would have ducked. Because he, as a defender, you know, he just wouldn't have done it, the guy. So it didn't look right. So I suspected it was a foul. But... I don't know, on slow-mo, maybe it looked better on Emerson, but it already blew up, didn't he? So we obviously thought the same thing. I don't know. I'm not a ref. I don't know.
It's one of them where if it was the other way round, if that had been a Wolves player heading the ball and Emerson had gone to ground, I'd imagine that goal would have been given. VAR there, I think had to find, and we've seen it often with West Ham, they have to find a reason to dis. When the referee's given a decision,
to try and back him up. Right?
Yes, they just look to see how they can affirm his decision, and what they do then is, you know, you can see the foot, the contact before Emerson jumps. I'm not sure. And the thing about it as well with the camera view, you can't actually see how much contact there is. It was that light. And this is where VAR gets very subjective, rather definitive, which, you know, I don't know if it ever can be, because a human always has to make a decision. But I'm not too fussed about it, because the referee did disallow the goal. And in my version of football, you don't have VAR. That wouldn't have been a goal. But then we're just arguing about whether the ref was right or not, and not three geezers in another part of town.
Yeah.
Then you get the substitution then. Obviously, Bowen pulls up with a hip injury. He brings Creswell on. I'm not sure. What were your thoughts on that?
What the fuck's he thinking? Actually, any thoughts? Yeah, everything's always so defensive, isn't it? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. But I just feel like I'm repeating myself all the time.
Yeah, I thought you might have seen Ings on.
Do you?
If it's ever going to happen, to be honest, anymore.
In bringing on, so he's took Bowen off and he's brought Creswell on. It looks a strange defensive move. But then, if you look at it, he switches to three at the back.
Yeah.
So is it, and here's the thing, is it a defensive mood? Or is it, I'm not going to call it a masterstroke.
Tactical.
Yeah. But a good tactical move from David Moyes.
It's not a bad shout, given the fact that we lack a left-sided attacking midfielder, and Emerson can clearly play that role. So
you
sort of sit Creswell in behind him. It's not a bad shout, but...
Oh, I see. Is that what happened, was it?
Pretty much. And, you know, something that I would consider exploring.
You could probably tell I didn't take much notice of the match after just getting the points.
It was so unengaging in the first half. It was hard to switch back on again in the second half. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Nigel, what do you think? Is that what you're trying to say?
What I wanted to do.
A lot of attention.
I think
it was a tactical genius, Nigel.
Did I think it was a tactical genius? Look, at the end of the day, it worked. And at the end of the day, we look better going forward, bearing in mind we've just lost Bowen.
Yeah.
So, I think it was on 60 minutes or roughly that it happened. So, the fact that he did something, and he did something different, so he changed the formation in a way, a lot of accusations are made at him that he's only got one way of playing. The big change for me, actually, was probably the appearance of Antonio. And maybe the first half highlighted my big frustration is that we haven't got a like-for-like replacement for Antonio. I don't have a problem with him playing that way, but when someone is so fundamentally glued to playing a certain way, to only have one person who's your main focal out point, I'm not saying that having Bowen up front doesn't work, because it's proved against certain teams it does. But the way we play, by not having a lot of the ball, and we rely on someone to hold the ball up with power and strength, Bowen don't do that. So, but the one thing that made me chuckle, I've just found it on Twitter, was the, so West Ham announced Jarrod's off with an injury, sponsored by QuickBooks, the substitution, which is good to know, really, isn't it? Obviously, other accounting software are out there, people.
Yeah.
But West Ham were 1-0 down. The replies to it on Twitter are quite funny.
Go on.
In a way. Uber West Ham said, disgraceful sub. Then N9711C said, chasing the game down 1-0 is a disgusting performance. We lose Bowen, so we're officially cooked and we bring in a defender. I've been saying there isn't anyone who would finish the season better from us, but I don't know. Maybe have a go after the Lake of Vukusen tie, depending. Awful substitution, said Phil Clark. Substitution for a losing team as well. Typical Moyes. Field of Rock, that is. Oh no, says Taiwo Omo Fasho. Though, Pompeyama, 1-0 down, forward off. Let's bring on a fullback. D Goody, FML. Moyes out now, says Moyes out now. He's fucking clueless.
Well, I agree with that one.
There you go. Steve Davis, I think he's
people
interesting.
People think he's boring, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, three attacking players on the bench, we're a goal down, on comes a defender. My favourite, though, Rob Forbes, bless him. What the fuck? This is the worst sub of the season. Why not Ings? I know that
I'd like
I'm
to know why
mean.
Not Ings, to be honest.
Yeah.
I would like to know why never Ings is what you should
I think
said.
That's the correct answer. Why? If we lose the game, Moyes is on an eye, didn't or nothing. He wins the game by hook or by crook. And I don't know, perhaps it does show that sometimes these managers do things for a reason. And they do know what they're doing. That's the way I see it. I think Moyes is unfairly... I'm not digging you boys out, by the way. I think he's unfairly lambasted by a large section of the...
You're right, he is a fair, unfair lambasted, the bloke.
You're twisting my words here.
He's unfairly lambasted, but he's also just produced the worst first half performance you've seen in the last how many years?
In at least 10 years, I think that's the worst first half performance.
I won't say Moyes ball is finest, but it was Moyes ball, pure Moyes ball.
I mean, we did win the game, but let's put it in context. We got a penalty.
But so did they.
Yeah, they got a penalty. Yeah, but we got a penalty, and we got a goal from a corner that got blown in with the high winds.
But they kicked with the high winds. They had a chance with corners.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
It's not that. You know, and then, you know, we've got this thing that happened at the end.
Yeah.
Which was.
Every goal, you could say, was a set piece.
They may have had a chance with the corners, Nigel, but you don't understand that when every time that Ward-Prowse puts the ball down, the commentator's always got to mention that he's a set
Beckham.
Piece expert and the Beckham record.
Well, he got a great chance, didn't he? It was one of the best positions I've seen him get a free kick in since he's been
That's
with
right,
us.
That's right, yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe this is it. And I think I put on the group, then. Do you think he's destined never to get this free kick that equals the record?
Well, as a wise old sage did say, after 14 months you've not scored with a set piece, I would say you're not a set piece expert.
Set piece specialist. Yeah.
And just to spoil that, obviously up his steps.
Yeah.
I mean,
my question is that a call? Is that a free kick? Is that actually a free kick?
That's not the record.
That's not. No, that is definitely not a free kick. So it don't count in regards of his attempt to break David Beckham's record, or even a tie with it. So we get a penalty. It went to VAR again, didn't it?
Yeah, that was pointless, wasn't it? That was such a handball.
That was the equaliser.
Yeah, it was Emerson cross involved again, and it hit. I think it was Kilman, Wolves' captain, on the hand. I mean, they didn't spend, but they spent long enough looking at it. So, I don't know if they looked for any offsides, maybe, as a reason not to give the penalty. Because it does make me wonder, if you cross the ball and the player in the middle is offside, but the ball don't get to him because it hits the player's hand, technically, when the ball's crossed, the bloke's offside, that offence is before the handball. So what would they do in that situation?
We'll find out next week, I imagine, when it goes against us.
Yeah, it's like, you know, to be honest, I don't think they know either, Nigel. No. They're just making it up as they go along.
And this is how stupid it is, because technically, as the ball's crossed in, if the bloke is offside, that's the first offence. But because the ball hasn't got into the middle of the box, he's not interfering with play yet, is he? But he would have been if the bloke hadn't handballed it. But I look forward to that one when it comes up. We get the penalty. What do you think of Pakatar's penalty style?
Not a big fan.
No.
It's not nice to watch, is it?
No.
But I think they should change the rules about that. I think it should be one continuous movement.
Well, that is the rule, approach the ball. I thought. And that's why they do that silly stutter now, so they can keep the movement. You can't step up, stop, and then kick the ball. You have to keep your feet moving. It's the stupid. I mean, on people brought up on a diet of Jeff Hurst, Ray Stewart, and Julian Dix, and maybe to a point, Mark Noble.
I couldn't eat all of them.
No, having Anyway, it's not one for the faint-hearted. No. Scored on 72 minutes, which is precisely, I think, the start of Newcastle's fight back the week before. So, hey-ho. We then jump forward and we score our second goal, or our third goal, depending on your outlook. Sorry, I put my notes down, which obviously was scored by... why does my mind escape me?
James
Ward-Prowse, because we talked about it. The corner, yeah.
Direct from the corner.
Did anyone see the nudge on the keeper by Antonio?
Yes.
No, I did.
No? Yeah.
And I was expecting it to be ruled out.
Yeah.
So, glad it wasn't.
I mean, definitely wind assisted.
But then again, if he stood that close in front of the keeper, is he not affecting the keeper's line of vision? Is he stopping him? I suppose he's not offside, is he? Because they probably had someone on the line or something.
Yeah, no, he's not offside because he's level when the ball's kicked.
Yeah,
and that's an important. And when we come to the goal, I'll cover as to why perhaps it should have been a goal, even though it wasn't. 2-1 up. Again, the game, they hold up. I think, is it 8 minutes injury time? The ball holds up?
Something like 7 or 8, yeah.
Obviously, we've had the VAR for our disallowed goal, the VAR for the penalty, substitutions, Bowen's injury. I'm not sure how they get 8 minutes out of that, but they did. Was you worried going in when it says 8 minutes? You think, here we go.
Worried. I don't worry anymore. No. I suspected something might happen. I do think it's a long time for us to hold out. But, you know, I was hopeful we could. They didn't look too threatening, to be fair. It was a sort of a rash kick away by Johnson when it gave him the corner. So,
well, second half stats, I mean, we had the first half where they'd had 11 shots. in the second half, they had one shot on target, one off target, and two blocked. Where yeah. West Ham then went four on target, four off target, one blocked. Possession was roughly 50-50. We'd put in 10 crosses into the box compared to the three for the first half.
Back to the first half, one of the first 10 minutes they had 98% possession or something.
I'm not sure it was for the first 10, but there was at one point in a 5 minute window they'd had 98% possession. So the corner, let's talk about their goal that wasn't. The corner comes over into the crowded box. Up jumps Kilman again, and off he goes, heads the ball home, goal's given, Mark Kebab turns up, I'm out of the room. Right. What happened next? Because a good 5 or 6 minutes later, I come back into the room to put a film on with the family, to find a game still going on and West Ham still winning 2-1. What did I miss?
Kilman heading the ball, running onto the ball, heading the ball into the left-hand corner of the net and running away with the whole of Molyneux feeling they've equalised and jobs are good.
Deservedly, I thought, really.
And I thought, oh, there you go. That, well, points better, respect the point, as our holiday friend would say, and I thought that was it, to be honest. I didn't expect anything.
Do you know what, though? I think everything that happened afterwards was the biggest overreaction to a disallowed goal so far this season. Because, I mean, everyone's saying it's the worst decision of VAR so far. Doesn't even compare with us against Newcastle, because you could identify a rule break there. He was offside, you know, in years gone by it would have been flagged for that anyway, and he was standing in front of the goalie, so that's why I didn't give it. Now at Newcastle we conceded a penalty where there actually wasn't an offence. I don't know how you could compare the two, really. I mean, oh, don't get me wrong, if it happened to us I feel harshly done by, because at the end of the day, I don't really think the offence mattered, but it was an offence. And I think Wolves seem to be the VAR darlings, because there's some kind of the mid-table team that are unoffendable, if you like. People are starting to do the debate all about the Wolves VAR decisions. Well, they happen all the time. And I know it rolls over from last season. And I think it sounds worse, because I think Gary O'Neill was quite articulate in explaining his grievances. So it gets focused into him a little bit more. But at the end of the day, harsh, yes. Especially overall, because I think they deserve the point. Fucking annoying if you're a Wolves fan, because it's the last kick of the game against a team that didn't even fucking try and play football. But, you know, we see them get struck off all the time. I'd rather them not get struck off, but, you know, we opened the box, didn't we? Well, we didn't, but everyone else did, and that's what you get. Let's hope we can have another one like that go away on Thursday. We won't be complaining. But what do you two think? It's not, you know, not just about a tired bloke who didn't give a fucking shit.
I didn't expect any more from it when he scored the goal. I thought, there you go, respect the point. And that's it. So I was surprised it was given. But, don't know, letter of the law. You stand there, you know, you look at it in replays. He is stood in front of the keeper. Is he obstructing the keeper's view? He was in an offside position. So, you know, letter of the law, is that correct? That's offside then. But in reality, he could see the ball, and in reality, he could have moved anywhere he wanted. He wasn't being impeded.
No, he weren't.
So, again, I would have been fuming.
Yeah.
So, but it just, none of it surprises you anymore, does it? That's the truth of it.
No, not really.
It's so hard to second guess half of these decisions, so.
You know what, you're going to see it again next week and it'll get given.
Yeah, I know. And I think I saw an interview with Gary O'Neill, I heard it, where they said something to him about it. He goes, look, it's not just that, it was just the standard all over. If you know anything about football, the level of anything, and you don't know that's not, then we've got a problem with the standard of everything. It's not just the refereeing here today, it's the way they're being presented all over or whatever. And I think Moyes even said it, didn't he, as well? This version of that, we're not just disappointed with all the decisions.
Do you know what, though? The VAR, they asked him to go to the camera, didn't they? And he looked at the camera and he didn't give it himself. The ref didn't give it himself. So he could have stood by his guns, the ref. He could have said, you know, I saw it in real time, I saw nothing wrong, which there weren't in real time. Then he looks again and says, oh, there is. But
Is he quite a new ref at this level? I didn't recognise him.
I don't learn the names or anything, mate.
Yeah, I'm not up with the referee names. I mean, obviously, I sat and searched it out to see what had gone on. Match of the day really didn't cover it that much. But then again, they didn't cover the West Ham stuff at Newcastle. So this is the way I see it, is that I can see the reasons why it was disallowed. I can see the reasons why it should have been allowed. While the player stands in front of the goalkeeper, we can argue about, does he impede his view or not? He isn't touching the goalkeeper, he isn't jostling the goalkeeper, and it's not a foul to stand in front of a goalkeeper.
He's offside.
But offside is not a foul. That's a separate offence. So then we move into the offside bit, and this is where I struggle, because if the player is not standing there, does that goal still go in? And 100 times out of 100, I would maintain that goal goes in.
Yeah.
There is no way Fabianski,
standing right top corner, isn't
it? Is reacting that fast from where the player heads the ball, which is from 4 yards out, 5 yards out, just inside the 6 yard line. No way in the world is Fabianski. It was too far over into the corner. You can do a reflex save. Normally in that you'll have a reaction, you throw your arms up. And if it hits your hand, you think, I've just pulled up a world class save. But the truth is, you just threw your hand up in blind hope. But as a natural reaction, because when you talk as a keeper, if you see something, make yourself big and just hope for the best. So that goal, the bloke standing in front of Fabianski did not change the outcome of that goal.
No. And following on from that, it makes you wonder if footballers are going to try doing that at all now. I mean, what's Antonio going to do if they're going to get in? Because this is going to happen every fucking time the ball goes in now.
I guess the only argument, counter-argument you could give on that is that he's taking Fabianski's attention to some degree away from what's going on, because he's bothered about the guy stood in front of him.
Hmm.
So,
I've not seen any West Ham players appeal for offside.
No, I don't think they did. I think everyone just, as I did, just thought, oh,
okay. Yeah. And that's telling in itself. So, and for me, players, if they think someone's offside or borderline, will stick their hands up and appeal for it. They will appeal for things they know not to be true, and the off chance that they'll get the decision. I didn't see anyone do that. And it's funny, because afterwards, once I've seen it and everything, I don't know about you. I didn't really feel I'd watch West Ham win. You know, I think because of my natural reaction was, the goal goes in, I walk out of the room. That when I've realised, oh, it weren't a goal, for me, because my natural reaction was that was a goal, I still felt a bit deflated, even though we won the game.
I felt nothing, to be honest. I felt, even winning the game, it was just...
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what football can do about VAR. I don't. If the fans could be organised and could be bothered to be organised, I think that there's something could be done. The thing I struggle with now is, why is football played? Why is football played? For what point? What is the point of football? No one ever actually asks this or comes up with it. And I say, what do you think the point of football is? Because organised football, I thought, was brought in as obviously as a sport, but then to entertain fans.
Yeah.
What is the point of football now? What is the ultimate point of football? Because it's now becoming, well, perhaps it has become, a sport for television. And that's it. It's a money sport. Think. And the fan base, actually, when you knuckle down to it, we mean absolutely nothing to the sport.
Cash cow to the owners.
I don't even think we're that, John. Because actually, when you think of the amount of money they get out of us, we barely, you know, would they get a year out of the fan base? 15 million?
Yeah, I know, but they still keep trying to squeeze more and more, don't they? You know what I mean?
You know, well, they probably make more than 50. Say 30 million. They make 30 million. They, you know, I think West Ham are going to make 250 million this year. What's 30 million? What are the fans? 30 million quid?
Well, yeah. No, but what's the extra, where they've upped everything this season, for next season, what's the benefit of the extra 3 million? You know, they still do it though, don't they? They keep squeezing and wanting and taking, changing the age of, like, for pension ages, and every which way they can, they try and squeeze you for more. So there's a reason for that as well, isn't it?
Hmm.
Their argument is, we're too cheap. Counter argument to that is, we're cheap because it's a shit stadium and you sold our home with the promise of cheap football, so
yeah,
you can't have it always.
No. Yeah, I mean, it is funny, we sort of touched it last week, but the narrative from the club that's now coming out from senior sources, or whatever, he's not here, we want to call him, I think the phrase was, you know, we sold them too cheap when we moved there. And now we're paying the price. And I think that about sums it up, really. Mm.
But if your ticket, say, realistically went up to a cheap ticket in the rest of football and it became an extra 150 quid a year, would you still keep that ticket? Would you have, or would you think, well, okay, well, if I'm paying that, I might as well have a better seat and pay a bit more? Think, no, sod it, I ain't paying that for this shit for you. Which way would you go, you know?
So
you had to pay 500 quid a year for your seat. Would you pay 500 quid
a
year?
Yeah, well, I did when I first went there, John. This is the funny thing is, I paid £500 for my first season ticket, banned for. So I paid it. Then I moved into band 5. Now, it seems as luck would have it, that's a rare move. Not many people get to move downwards. But anyway, I got to move downwards into a band. But it was funny because, as I said before, the bloke to my left was paying £600 for the same view. If you look at how much the band 4 seats are now, is it not 650 quid?
Yeah, something around there.
So if while percentage wise my price rise is higher, the actual money in the pocket bit you know, let's put it like this. My season ticket's going to cost me £380. That's the same price I paid for a Chicken Run season ticket in 1998-99. So, what are we looking at?
Chicken Run, man.
20, yeah, you know, that was, you know, possibly one of the best views I've had. I've sat in every stand. I had a season. I've spent time as a season ticket holder. In every part of the ground, the west, the north, the east, and the south. And I think the view I had on the Chicken Run was possibly the best.
Yeah, I didn't get the Chicken Run. I had all the other three.
Yeah. So I spent 3 years over there. Comparatively, you know, if I had to pay £500, I mean, if I had to buy two adults and it cost me £1,000, that's still £50 cheaper than the last two tickets I had at Upton Park. So I still think I'm probably 4 or 5 years away from paying £500.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
£100.
But your view and your whatever, it's quite detached, isn't it, up there? There's a level of detachment away
There is a level of detachment. I'm not saying you get used to the view. I've always actually preferred the view from being higher up. In when I was on the Chicken Run, I was the back row, I think, or the second from back row. So I was about up above the pitch. It's the nearest I've had been from the pitch. But other than that, I sat upstairs in the west. The best view I had was when I sat upstairs in the west. And I think perhaps because I started as a young kid sitting in the west stand upstairs, row U, we sat in the corner. Perhaps that's because that's the first view I had of Upton Park on a regular occasion. That was the view I sort of, you know, is in my memory bank. So sitting high up don't really bother me. I can see the pitch. My eyes are shot to pieces anyway without glasses. So even if I was near the pitch, I wouldn't be able to read players' names.
Told you go blind.
Yeah. So I don't feel the need. And you know you go, you don't go, but you still come back to going, John. It can be going football is habit forming.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah. But it's they're going to be, like you're saying about, I mean, VAR has had a massive effect on the game, yeah?
Yeah.
So it has taken away the spontaneity and the you know, some level of excitement. Because, you know, half the time they score and everyone just looks around to see, do you think it's a goal? Is it or not a goal? Yeah. You know, the stuff that goes on in the ground when VAR is being checked, the lack of information, the lack of... And then the fact that things still go wrong is just sort of like demoralising to the point, well, what is the point then?
what is the point if you're going to have this much of a negative effect on the game by taking away the celebration, you know, and the spontaneity, then still get it wrong? What's the point? So, there's good. What stage does it? You've got football at the highest level affected it. Football of being an entertainment by all these factors, plus the fact that they're trying to up the prices. At what point do the likes of you, or others, say, do you know what? I can go and spend 15 quid down the road. I can get a beer for half the price. I can meet a load of mates who are doing that now. They all might have all been Tottenham, Chelsea, whatever fans, that they all now go to the local club. I know a load of people. We go there on a Saturday afternoon. I get my football fix, see my mates. I pay 15 quid to get in and have a good day out. Yeah. At what point do people start doing that? Because that's where I got to when I left, when I gave up my season ticket. I was going to Corinthian Casuals more often than not, because I was seeing mates there, most of them were Chelsea fans and whatever. So many people had given up their Premier League season tickets and were going to the local football now. Everyone just having a chat, meeting, having drinks with mates, drink in the ground, drink on the stand with a beer in the stand. And, you know, it was a football fix and none of that bollocks. So what do you think it would take for you to get to there, Nigel?
Do you know, I'd like to say that there is a point, but then I think deep down, if I'm truthful to myself, I'm not sure that there is a point. We didn't discuss the Tottenham game. It was two games, actually, funny enough.
Fucking hell. That's what it's done to us. Yeah. We forgot a Tottenham game.
The funny thing about the Tottenham game, briefly, which weren't really much, was it, is that obviously I didn't feel well. So at the last minute, I didn't go to the game. That would never have happened.
No.
And there have been times where I've dragged myself out of a sick bed to go football, because I always felt better at football. We're playing Spurs, you know, the cup final, the biggest game of the season, one we always look forward to. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on a Tuesday night, when
after a bank holiday weekend,
when I really didn't feel well.
Went from 8 o'clock to an 8:15.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like I couldn't face doing it. I couldn't face the journey from where I work to get there, and then having to find somewhere to park, get to the ground, and then having to do it to get home. You're not going to be home till midnight at the earliest, probably. Maybe, you know, people that live even further away, you know, you do it if it's, you know, for football we do it, but, you know, maybe after doing it for, you know, I've been doing this nigh on for 50 years, maybe the love is starting to wane as such of attending, and maybe the fact I know I can watch it on TV helps.
Yeah.
You know, what if you couldn't watch it on TV? I think actually one thing, Len came up with a great thing.
I did?
You did. Did you not say it's not Moyes' fault?
Yeah, I did.
Every game's
Moyes'
televised.
Fault that fucking football's televised.
Yeah. When you think about it, perhaps this is where us old timers, we sit sometimes and go, oh, the fan base has changed and whatever. And you think, when you knuckle it down, you know, the comments that I read out after the game, there was a few people in America, I think one of them was in Australia, and you're thinking, you know, back in the day, they wouldn't have been able to see the game.
No, so, we wouldn't even known it was a fucking non-existent
star. So they'd have had a match report. that was just read in a newspaper that would never have elaborated. And what they would have seen is West Ham won away from home.
Yeah.
Now, it is a strange thing about it, which made me laugh, was on the TV, you had the woman commentator and the other bloke, who I didn't know who he was, the male bloke, commentator, the co-commentator, bemoaning about, they were saying, oh, our generally West Ham aren't great away from home, and they're much better at the London Stadium. Yet now we've won more games away from home this season than we have at home. The one thing that David Moyes' football does, and he's done this a lot, is, and perhaps we've, you know, something for me to bring up next week, is how he's revolutionised our away form. If you're an away fan, going to watch West Ham away from home is not the, you know, the under Redknapp, yeah, we used to get 3 or 4 away wins under Redknapp, and that was when we were half decent, finishing in the top 10. What we did at Upton Park though is we won our games, and back then that was the old mantra was, how you keep your fan base on your side is win your own games, because that's where the majority of fans are watching you. Only, you know, a couple of fans, and, you know, blimey, I remember back in the day, you was lucky to get 1,500 West Ham fans away at some games. You know, now you've got 3,000 there, but how much fun are they having away? You talk to Dodsey, it's a bit different what he thinks about Moyes. Why is that? His away days are much better now, because the, you know, we would have lost that. You know, my mate texted me and said that, you know, he's been to Wolves, I don't know, half a dozen, maybe more times. It's the first time he's seen West Ham win there. And the first time he went was with me in 1989, and we got beat. So is that a fair payoff? Probably not for Moyes, Paul. I don't know. Perhaps I'm asking the wrong two people.
Yeah, I mean,
do you not see it that way, though? You know, you think it's an argument for having Moyes there in a way.
Well, this is what why the pundits are so pro Moyes. They don't watch the game.
Mm. Yeah, that's also
they can't. Yeah. So you know, they have got that old fashioned outlook on it.
They just look at the results.
Yeah, but they cannot look at critique Moyes and say why he deserves to stay when they don't watch the game. The fans that watch all the game have got a better judgment of what Moyes is, or what they perceive Moyes is doing wrong.
But the, me the included. The away setup is an acceptable level to some degree away from home. Do you know, it's when he's set up the same way and we're playing Luton at home. Mm. That's his downfall.
Yeah.
So, that's quite interesting, because I get what you're saying. So, and this is the thing I've said, when you go away, it's perfectly acceptable for us to only have 40% of the ball, 35% of the ball, to us, but to win the game. So is the problem, actually, Moyes needs to be more flamboyant at home in front of the main bulk of the fans?
Yes. Yeah, that's been his... This is what we've said, I've said it time and time again on here. This season... I don't know how many games in, we were clearly safe, weren't we? We were like, you know, by the time we're sort of 2 months into the season and we're like on 20 points or something, it's clear we're going to have a decent season. Have a go. Chain, he had a hide into nothing. If he'd been more flamboyant at home, changed his tactics, been more attacking and had a go at teams instead of like just replicating what he's done time and time again, he'd be definitely be in the job at the end of the year, wouldn't he? Because it was clearly, we were picking up points, we were doing well. Okay, let's have a go then.
I mean, Aston Villa, yeah, sitting on 60 points. We are 12 points behind Villa, yeah, away from home. Villa have only got 2 more points than us.
Yeah.
At home, our home record is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we're 12th for our home record wins.
Yeah. We're terrible stats-wise defensively, aren't we? We're one of the worst in the league at the moment, for which is, again, not what Moyes is about, apparently. Moyes' teams are solid and defensively sound. Well, this team ain't been, is it?
No, I find that quite strange when I hear the pundits talk about Moyes as a coach and everything. You know, he's conceded, is it 56 goals, I think now? I believe 56. Actually, scoring, I don't think, has been too much of a problem. It has been the conceding. I think, when was the last clean sheet we had? Blimey.
Don't know.
Have we had one this year?
I think we've only had two in sort of 50 away games or something. Some stat I heard.
Funny enough, the last two clean sheets we had, one was against Freiburg, and then the other one was 0-0 to Brighton, which was on the 2nd of January.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He went three games without conceding a goal against Man U, Arsenal and Brighton. I mean, that's a fantastic achievement to begin with. He's played three games there, not conceded a goal. Man U, Arsenal, Brighton. And since then, we've only kept one clean sheet.
Yeah. The whole thing with Moyes ins, Moyes outs or whatever, it's his own downfall. It's been in his hands. He's not deaf. He must know that, you know, it was within his gift to change the way he sets up and performs. And you know some of the performances, I mean, how you know, saying about an acceptable away from home, but the away game against Sheffield United and things like that, you're just like, oh, come on, let's be a bit more attacking, let's be a bit more front-footed. It's just, it's within his ability to have changed it. But now the story is that he's got the hump with everyone, he feels disrespected, and he's going to walk away anyway, isn't he? That's the latest thing this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, or last week? You know, I'm still not sure that is something that will happen. I can't see him walking away. I can't see him getting a bigger club than West Ham, because if you look at the teams above us, not one of them, you know, he ain't going to get Man United again. And if you look, he ain't going to get Liverpool. Liverpool are going to have to change their manager. You know, City ain't changing theirs. Arsenal ain't changing theirs. Man United possibly, though maybe not, but they ain't going to go for him. Where's he going to go? Villa definitely ain't going to have him. Look at the teams below us, who's having him? The only place he can go realistically, I would see, would be the likes of Villa, if they wanted to get rid of Dyche.
Everton.
Everton, if they wanted to get rid of Dyche. I'm not even sure the likes of Fulham or Bournemouth. You know, you wouldn't see him at Wolves, would you? Or Brighton. And that's the funny thing is that Palace have just appointed, the ex-Eintracht Frankfurt manager. What is left for Moyes after West Ham? All this talk was he may walk away. His stock's really high. His stock is high in the media. But where's he going to go in football?
Leeds United.
I'm not even sure they would accept him.
Well, they might. The fans might not, but the board might.
You reckon? What, they'd get
I'm
rid of?
I'm thinking it'll be someone who went down maybe a year or two
possibly
ago, who thinks they'll want to go up again.
Yeah.
Something in that vein.
Because that's what he does.
Leicester. Yeah. So I
get,
would he
get a team up? Or, I mean, he doesn't switch the teams around enough to play championship football. Play twice a week.
Well, it is a funny thing, yeah. So he did well at Preston, yeah. didn't get them out of the championship, though, did he?
No. In fact, they improved when you left.
Yeah. So the nearest they got was against us. And
playoff final.
And yeah, but Moyes wasn't the manager then.
That's right.
So, yeah.
I don't know where we'd end up, but I don't know. The story going, or the narrative that's saying that he has been offered a contract, but it's the terms are diminishing his role. That wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me that if he's, you know, if starting is being getting more established and staying, that if his role is being diminished, that might be enough to sort of make him feel disrespected and walk away. Being the sort of man who's had the control of everything, like he's had it his own way for the last, how was it, 4 years he's been here, this time round. So that narrative wouldn't surprise me, that he has been offered a contract, but he's not going to have as much control over transfers and things going forward.
Yeah, that's possible.
No, but that's a modern way for football, though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, I think, Moyes. I think if you look at a lot of clubs where he'd go, there aren't many clubs now that operate that the manager gets to pick and choose as sole control over the transfers.
You just need to look at the state of the squad four years on. And then it's clear why he shouldn't be. Because if he has had pretty much the definitive yes or no all these years, you look at the state of our squad, he's the only one to blame then. That he can only have 11 players on the pitch and only make no... Was it against Tottenham he didn't make a substitution?
Yeah. But I mean, we can quickly cover that because it's a Tottenham game. Yes, he didn't make a substitution. If you look at the Newcastle game, he gets criticised for substitutions he makes that changes the outcome. And last week in the podcast, I'm pretty sure I said, I think I'd have preferred him to not make a sub. Lo and behold, that's what he does. We don't win the game, but we don't lose the game. Second half was a bit tepid from both sides. It wasn't the normal West Ham Tottenham.
No.
You know, funny enough, I thought though the fans come across well. I would say that. It looked possibly the biggest crowd of the season for a league game, funny enough. It looked quite busy there. But he don't make a sub. Which is quite rare. In a way, isn't it?
But then that's extremely telling, isn't it? That, you know, you look at the bench, there's not a lot there to affect a positive change. There's reactionary substitutions, you know, if your defender gets injured, there's a defender for defender, there's a whatever for whatever.
Well, look, these are the players not used at the weekend, yeah, against Wolves. Calvin Phillips, Maxwell Cornet, Danny Ings, Angelo Ogbonna, Naya Fagird, and Anang.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Fagird. I mean, well, I do know he was inconsistent, wasn't he? So he's probably lost his pace. I think Mavropanos is doing well.
Yeah, he went out of the... Didn't he go out of the team because of injury?
Yeah.
An illness or something.
Ogbonna. Bonner is a, you know, is he more mobile than Zuma? I don't know. Cornet, I just don't get it. I just genuinely don't get it. He's got some ability about him, and he's never had a run. He's never what I don't know. And Ings, every time he has a good performance, he gets sat on the bench again for two or three weeks. So it's just so much of it doesn't make sense.
No, and the thing I'd say about Ings is for me is that actually that in bringing Creswell on and going to a back three actually plays in then to having Ings on the pitch with Antonio, because if you've got three at the back, you can naturally play a 3-5-2.
Yeah.
Rather than a 3-4-3. So
and if you are playing like that, having the ability with Creswell and Emerson on the left hand side is quite strong, isn't it?
Yeah. It is for a player. Ings loves to sniff around the box and he likes the ball played in front of him. He's not a back to the wall. He's totally different to Antonio. But back in the day when you had two strikers, you know the old thing was the old big man little man, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know McAvenny was different to Cotty. Cotty was the fox in the box. If you look at the players that played with Dave Cross, Pop Robson when he first came, Goddard, Alan Taylor as such, none of them were built like David Cross was built. Before Cross, if you look up front to the likes of, you had Jeff Hurst and Budgie Byrne in the 60s, two different types of strikers. Look through football, some of the greatest attacking, you know, Chris Sutton, Alan Shearer in the Premier League, were both different. So Antonio and Ings could actually work in a 3-5-2 if he wants to pack the midfield like that.
Yeah, well, there's opportunities to try that when you're playing teams that are, you know, on paper or in league position not as good as you, but he doesn't, does he?
No. Well, we've got a couple of games coming up.
We have.
Yeah.
We have got two games this week, yeah. So we've got Leverkusen on Thursday, and we then, I think, is it Fulham on Sunday?
Yep.
Sunday, 2 o'clock.
So Fulham, let's look at Fulham's away record. So Fulham's away record.
They seem to win a lot of London derbies. I mean, they spanked Tottenham.
Yeah.
That was at home, though, wasn't it?
They've won two.
What, London derbies or away games?
Away games. So they've won 9 at home.
Right.
And won 2 away. So away from home, they've picked up 11 points. That's it. So you would like to think that's another 3 points for us.
I would say that all depends on Thursday.
Do you think?
If we come out of Thursday pretty much undamaged, which I'd say like a 1 or 2 loss,
yeah,
I think we would do all right against Fulham. If we come out of there with a spanking, I think we will, I don't know, I think everything will change.
Right, okay. I don't know. I think I fancy us. Let's do predictions. Yeah, let's do predictions when we wrap it up. We've got some news we'll quickly cover. Apparently, there's news about Boeing. I must have missed it. Apparently, it was said earlier. So Boeing's hip injury, I think, is we've got to wait and see. I think is the news.
Don't sound good. When you say hip.
Well, he took a knee to the, the official response was he took a knee to the hip. That's the official response. The other bit of news that's broke tonight is Santi JFM, whoever he is, has claimed on Twitter that Manchester City have agreed personal terms with Lucas Paqueta. There have been no negotiations between West Ham and Man City on the fee, but the players' agents expect the clubs to negotiate this summer. So there you go. So that has broken tonight. Now, there is a further update to that. In the, Sean, I've put this to Sean, and he's asked me not to quote Barry, sorry, not to quote the source on the podcast, but the source who happens to be the players, helped bring the player to West Ham, Barry, sorry, the source, said the story's not true. So I've not quoted anyone there.
We did say that about Declan Rice, and it did turn out to be true.
So. Yes.
Well, I'd like to think that it's not, if it's true, it shouldn't be out there because is that not tapping up? Is that not the actual definition of tapping a player up?
Yeah, but the only people who seem to be upset about tapping up are the fans.
I thought it was against regulations.
Well, but do the clubs get upset about it?
I don't know. I think people have been reported in the past for tapping up players.
Yeah.
Clubs have been fined, haven't they?
Have they?
I believe so.
Can you think?
I imagine the other club who's the tappee would have to complain.
Yeah. So the way I see it is that this goes on in football. And I'd hazard a guess. At some point, I'd bet you 50 to 60% of transfers always start with technically what could be classed as tapping up. So before a club wants to go down a road of putting in bids for players, they want to know, does the player want to play for them?
Yeah, I understand.
So word will be got to that player.
But for it to be like... There's got to be some kind of level of secrecy or something in place, surely.
And if it's done with agents, yeah, is that tapping up? What if it's the agents have decided? Who's tapped who up then? An agent representing Man City approaches an agent representing Pakatar. As Manchester City approached Pakatar? No. But an agent acting on their behalf as approached an agent acting on... Is that conversation going to happen? Yes.
Well, of course it will.
Ain't tapping up then, is it?
No.
So, it's, you know... It's a part of football. The funny thing is, I'd say, is we only get the ump about players doing this when they're really good.
Oh, don't give me the ump particularly. Because, you know, I think we're all kind of expecting to be going to City, don't we?
Yeah, judging by the cuddle we gave Pep.
Yeah.
And the fact that it nearly happened last summer, but if it weren't for his FA charge, so, you know, I think we're all kind of expecting it, but
for
somehow to be made public, if that turns out to be true, that has been negotiated to that level, and that then that's wrong.
I mean, it is a thing. Would it affect West Ham as a whole if we didn't have Pakatar?
Well, I think when he didn't play for how many games at the beginning of the year, it showed it will. Didn't it? But, you know, we were pretty awful without him. We hardly created any opportunities, did we?
Yeah, we were pretty awful with him Saturday first off.
Oh, yeah, well. He wasn't really engaged, was he?
No. He had no interest for me whatsoever. It is akin to Di Canio, because Di Canio, you know, head and shoulders, most skillful player I've seen to play for West Ham, more skillful than Pakatar. Di Canio had that throw himself on the floor bit, funny enough, about him, and Pakatar seems
definitely
to have the same thing, that he wants to roll around on the floor and try and con a free kick more than he sometimes wants to get the ball and damage the people as best he can.
Yeah. But, you know, on Saturday he was out on the left, wasn't he?
Yes.
People say, you know, he links well with Emerson, and he does. But he is Brazil's number 10. He's essentially a central midfielder and kind of feels a little bit wasteful to have him out on the left. So maybe it does affect him. Maybe sometimes he thinks, oh, I'm out on a bloody left again. Who knows? But anyway, we're going to talk about Leverkusen?
Anything... what are you expecting out in Leverkusen?
No idea. What are you expecting? they haven't lost a game all season. They haven't whatever. We lost them in a pre-season friendly, but it wasn't exactly the same lineup we had then that we will have on Thursday. So, what do we think?
I think we're going to get fucking murdered myself.
Do you really think we're going to get stuffed?
I don't watch too much German football, but the things I've seen about Leverkusen is they will give you a chance, but I think sitting back against them isn't the right way. I think you need to go at them a little bit. And I just think they can open us up.
Hands up who thinks Phillips is going to start.
Well, don't say that, please.
Well, yeah.
Isn't Alvarez
he's banned. Yeah. He is banned. So, I was just going to bring up Leverkusen.
It's
going to
be really interesting, isn't it? Everything about this tie is going to be interesting.
This tie is going to be, yeah, because this Thursday will show us, won't it, basically.
It's going to show Leverkusen too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because they ain't played in, well, under this manager, they haven't played a Premier League team yet, have they? Not this season.
So, right, let's look at their last few games. So, at the weekend, they beat Union Berlin in Berlin. They won 1-0 with a 45-minute plus 8 minutes of injury time penalty. So, it was only by a penalty. They won 1-0 against Union Berlin, who are... where are Union Berlin at? They're like mid-table, I believe. Union Berlin, 13th, which is out of 18 teams. So, they've only won 1-0 there. So, Let's go back to that. Matches, right. So, before that, they beat Fortuna Düsseldorf in the cup, but that's Düsseldorf. Currently Bundesliga 2 team. They beat Hoffenheim 2-1. Yeah? So when you look at that, their goals come in the 88th and 90th minute. The previous game to that, they beat Freiburg 3-2 in Freiburg. Team that we beat, yeah, and lost to. They got their goals. It was a tight game. If you look in the Europa League, they beat Carrier Bag at home 3-2 to win the tie 5-4. They were 2-0 down halfway through the second half. And then the two goals to win the tie came in the 90th minute, 90 plus 3 and 90 plus 8. If you go over to the Carrier Bag away leg, which was 2-2, you know, their equaliser come in the 90th minute. You know, they will go all the way till the end. They're a fit team. But my point of saying that is teams do get in front against them. They haven't really swept teams away recently.
So are they at all? This season, have they been known for scoring big scores?
Well,
I mean, they've obviously beaten. Have they beaten Bayern twice now?
I think they have beaten them twice. So, I'm just flicking through their results. Their recent results. So, as I said, you know, they beat Carrier Bag 3-2, beat Wolfsburg 2-0, beat Cologne 2-0, who were at the bottom. They beat Mainz 2-1, Heidenheim, who were bottom, 2-1. You know, they beat Bayern, funny enough, 3-0. So Bayern knew they were expected to. They beat Stuttgart 3-2. Not big wins, you know. Mm. In February, they won 2-0, drew 0-0, won 3-2 and won 1-0. So, biggest win of the season. I can see they beat Bochum, which was the bottom of the table, 4-0.
So you're hopeful that our Len's fear of a spanking isn't coming.
Recently, they've done what it takes to win games. So what I'm saying is, especially if you look at, you know, Carrier Bag, are not a known team, but Carrier Bag really should have knocked out Leverkusen. They allowed them in their own tie back into the game late, but then in Germany were 2-0 up. In the 70th minute. So, and the three Leverkusen game goals came in the last, 15 minutes plus injury time. So, and especially with it being the first leg away, I could see us actually getting something there. I can. Mad as it seems, because I think they've played 41 games now and not lost one of them.
Yeah.
They've not lost a cup game. I think they're in the final of the DFB Cup. And they're obviously 13 points now, is it, clear in the Bundesliga? It might be more than that now, because Bayern Munich got beat again at the weekend. So if we look at the table, there's 16 points clear of Munich. We've got a goal difference of plus 50. How many goals have they scored? They've scored 69 goals. Bayern have scored 80. So, still a good amount of goals, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to the match, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm taking off a day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Never heard of the bloke.
No. You going to the game then, John?
Yeah.
All right. I'll look out for you.
And Arthur.
Yeah, obviously, and Arthur. Yeah.
But George is coming as well. He's, we're taking half a day. We're going to go. If you want to come for a beer somewhere, we'll be around.
I'm going to be in Leverkusen, so.
Oh, what, this Thursday?
Yeah. Road trip. So. Yeah.
Did you get a ticket, Nige? Yes.
We don't discuss these things publicly,
You'd never mentioned that you were going. That's the first time you mentioned
it. Well, yeah. I'm very confident. Yes.
You're very confident.
I'm very confident.
It's the second name thing that did it for you, isn't it? Can't turn a Khan down.
Yeah, there you go. I'll be not far. I looked it up, not far from the village where my family came from. It's about 150 miles further south. Looking forward to it. A long old day. Back Friday lunchtime. Hey ho, yeah.
What's your travel involve?
I meet about 5 o'clock in the morning. A good friend who's driving. There's about four of us.
Is that your friendly DJ?
He is a DJ, yes. Off we drive to Calais. I don't know if it's ferry or train, one of them. And then I think it's about 5 hours from Calais to Cologne via, I think we have to go around Brussels, skirt a bit of Holland, the south bit of Holland, and then cross over. I don't know if we crossed the Rhone, but we did. Obviously, the Cologne's on the Rhine. So what
do you do after? Do you go
get back in the car and go back to Calais? Yeah,
yeah. Straight after.
Straight after, yeah. Yeah.
Very tiring.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fun, hey? Fun.
Yeah. Well, it's an experience, isn't it?
Well, I've got to make a move, so should we do predictions?
Yeah, let's do predictions. First up will be Leverkusen away. John?
I think we are going to lose 2-1. Going to be positive there. Give us a goal.
I think 3-0 we're going to lose.
Oh, wow.
Do we get a goal? 3-1, we'll lose. Which doesn't kill the game off, so. I don't like predictions, but. 3-1. No, 3-0. Do you know what? I'm trying to think. I'm trying to work out the momentum of it. do we go 2-0 down and we're still shutting up shop? Or do we try and get one? What do we do? Is it worth getting the one?
Does he go full on low block?
It's going to be such a fascinating game. I don't know the answer. Does he go for it? I don't know. I think we'll lose 3-0.
All right. Well, I'll stick with that. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Mm. That's what I'm going to go for. I think we'll take the lead.
Oof.
How about that?
I don't think the likes of like Pacatar and, you know, Kudos and that will be well up for it, because it's a stage that they feel they really deserve it to be performing on.
Mm.
I think the fact that their success in Germany this season highlights this match more, and I think they'll be well up for it. I hope so, anyway.
All right. Well, Fulham, quickly then.
Fulham,
one apiece for me.
Yeah, Fulham would be a draw. I was going to go 1-1, but I'll go 2-2.
All right. Okay.
Goals are fun.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a clean sheet 2-0 win.
Ooh.
Wow.
Against Fulham. Cementing our seventh spot position. Though I think if we beat Fulham, we could go six. I don't know who Man United have got. Which is quite funny, because at one point it looked like we were about to drop to 10th or maybe even 11th. Premier League, let's have a look at the matches. So coming up, Manchester United have got Bournemouth away. So we'll know what we got to do. Bournemouth away. There you go. If Bournemouth at home can get a point, we beat Fulham.
I got a horrible feeling Chelsea are going to do us. And all my Chelsea mates who I've been laughing at all season will have the last laugh.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, I'm looking at the games that we got. We've got Fulham, Palace, Luton. I think we win them.
Yeah.
So that sticks us then on 57 points, which I think is a great tally. It's not the greatest. I think realistically, to get Europe, I think you're going to need 60 plus.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see.
We will see. All right, gents, it's been a pleasure. I've got to shoot at this point.
Right. Cheers, okay, JB. Okay. And we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah. Good luck. John. Good luck on Thursday, and I'll see you Sunday.
We'll do.
Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore, more than just a podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.